A Korean Canadian woman, and I hold my head.
Good evening, CKLN listeners. Check, 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 check. Good evening, CKLN listeners.
Hold my head up high.
You are listening to Word of Mouth Mondays. This is your guest host, BK, aka Black Krishna. Today, a special July 5th, 2010 show, I'm joined by two colleagues of mine, Dan Dix and Brian Law, talented filmmakers and journalists from PressForTruth.ca. And they were very, very active. A couple of things of note, had a screening at the Bloor Cinema on June 18th. Had a screening at the Bloor Cinema on June 18th, and of their new film about the SPP sequel to NAFTA, called United We Fall, basically creating a North American Union, European Union-style federation between Canada, America, and Mexico without the permission of any of us, and also covered the G20 extensively. So let's see if these guys are up. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Dan, Brian, you're on the air. Let's start first by telling us a bit about the film United We Fall, because this whole thing is ultimately about globalism. You know, the police in Toronto were basically, in my opinion, running military-style population control exercises, but they don't normally do that, so somebody clearly ordered them to. So, you know, this is all part of a bigger structure. Break down the film United We Fall just so people know what it's about and where they can get it.
Sure. Yeah. The film delves into the idea of a North American Union, the idea of Canada, U.S. and Mexico merging together into a union, very similar to what happened with the European Union. We managed to interview a lot of the major players who are involved in the push for this thing, members of the Bilderberg Group and the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations. And we've also spoken with a lot of other people on the other side of this, people like Luke Radowski and Alex Jones and other investigative journalists who are really at the forefront of this current fight.
Yeah, and so basically the whole idea is that we wanted to get both sides of the issue in terms of globalization, because you know, whether you agree with globalization or you don't agree with globalization, right now we are being kind of pushed, whether we like it or not, into a global state. So we need to start discussing how we're going to mitigate that power to these elite groups of people who are wielding more power over larger groups and larger groups of people in larger areas and more countries. We need to start to find ways to mitigate that power so that we can have a say in what happens to us and we can control our own destinies and our own lives.
Absolutely, gentlemen. So you guys traveled throughout, Canada, America, and Mexico to make this film. Can you break down a bit of what that was like? You were literally talking to people and saying sort of in a nutshell, hey, guys, there's this big trade deal. You people, especially in Mexico and so on, remember what happened the last time your government promoted a great big trade deal. You know, what are your thoughts on the thoughts of people, or did they have any? Did they not know?
Yeah, I mean, when I traveled to Mexico, I went alone to Mexico, but Dan and I traveled all over America. We went to Washington, New York, Chicago, a bunch of different cities all over America and all over Canada as well doing this. But down in Mexico, it was pretty much the same as it is in all the other countries. There were people on both sides of the issue. Some people felt that having a single currency known as the Amero would be beneficial for their economy, that, you know, the Mexican dollar isn't really worth as much as the Canadian and the U.S. dollar, and to put them on par with a single North American currency, they saw that having some benefits, but at the same time, they also realized that free trade has not really benefited their country and not benefited them in specific ways. They've actually felt like their government is more distant than it used to be and that they have very little say. But that went kind of the same in all three countries. We found people who were supportive of the idea and also people who were against it. But I think it was kind of a 70-30 or an 80-20 mix of people. 70% of people would say, you know, that they weren't really supportive of the idea of giving up this much control to a single group of people, and a very small percentage of the people seemed to be for it. But when you asked them to go into details of how this would benefit them, the discourse kind of broke down. I think most people that feel like this would be a benefit to them, I think, are reacting to what they've been fed in the mainstream media about unity and globalization and haven't really looked into the deeper aspects of what globalization does in terms of affecting them.
Yeah, I'm even seeing the World Cup soccer ads here. A lot of Budweiser United or We're United or United We Stand or something like that. So these ideas are seeded into our minds, you know, subtly from a million different directions. Alan Watt from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com calls this predictive programming, where they basically get us kind of thinking in ways that get us to accept big changes. One of the big changes here in Toronto during the G20 was the security situation. But sticking with United We Fall, because, Dan, you got a big taste of this when you went to Washington and New York and filmed the Federal Reserve, a bunch of Masonic monumentary. Can you break down what the situation was like in the U.S. and what your response was to questions about, you know, what your ID was and whether you had to offer up your papers for simply filming in public like millions of people have for, you know, generations, tourists and so on, without any serious necessarily causal link to violence. So break down the security situation in the U.S. just so we can relate it to what just happened here in Toronto.
Yeah, for sure. Brian and I spent one full day in Washington. That's all the time we had to do there. So we tried to cover as many things as we could on that day. We went to a lot of the key locations, like the White House and the Federal Reserve and the Capitol Building, and just all around the city, really. And we were stopped, I don't know how many times, maybe 20 or 30 times, and asked for our identification, asked why we were, what we were filming for, who we are with. And at no time did we ever give any of those guys our identification or necessarily tell them who we are, because we knew, you know, it's completely within our rights to remain anonymous at that point. And we were actually visiting on the day of a joint session. I believe it was on, what was that, 999, I think, is when we were there. So we just happened to be in town when there was some heightened security. So we were constantly being stopped and asked for our ID. But it's amazing, like you said, you want to kind of compare it to what's happening in Toronto and the unbelievable things that happened this weekend in Toronto, Canada, due to the G20 summit. Here, I was subjected to searches and had to present my ID just as many times as I was asked in New York, only this time I didn't have a choice. I was threatened with arrest if I did not show my identification. So I'm quite upset right now at how the Canadian government passed, well, enacted certain laws, or said they did, which turns out to not even be true, that violated our rights and went against the Constitution and what Canadians believe in. And I had a worse time here in my own city than I did standing out in front of the Federal Reserve.
Unbelievable. And that's quite shocking. That's a sign of the times, though. And that's why you guys do the great work you do at pressfortruth.ca. Just sticking with the film for a moment, United We Fall had a very successful premiere at the Bloor Cinema on June 18th. The film is now out on DVD and also out online. You folks are in this to win this, and so you're offering people a chance to buy, obviously, the high-quality DVD, burn copies, you know, wake up your neighbors so that they know, you know, if you haven't been taking this stuff seriously, it's 2010. You know, no problem. It's just, you know, you've been doing whatever you've been doing. Hopefully you've been enjoying it. This may be the time to take these issues seriously. So where can they find the film United We Fall? Brian, please let me know.
They can go on to Press for Truth. That's pressfortruth.ca, and you can watch it online there. People have been reposting the video all over the Internet, so we offer a free version of the film for people to watch. And if they're interested in getting a DVD from us, they can pre-order DVDs, and we'll be mailing them out very shortly to people. They're also hopefully we're going to be getting it into some stores as well, but the DVD is going to be packed with about 3 hours of extra features, including deleted scenes and extra interview bits that we just couldn't find a spot for in the film. But I felt it was important information. We needed to get it out there. So, you know, if people feel like supporting the filmmakers and supporting the cause, they're going to get 3 hours of extra stuff that you won't see on the Internet. So, yeah, you can check it out at pressfortruth.ca, and or you can just type it into Google. Type in United We Fall at Press for Truth, and you'll find it.
Sounds good. Brian, can you get a little close to your microphone? Want to make sure people can hear you loud and clear. Explain the great work that you do. Dan, let's move on to the G20 situation. You and I are colleagues. In the interest of full disclosure out there, you are listening to Word of Mouth Mondays. This is your guest host, BK, a.k.a. Black Krishna. I'm a CKLN radio programmer, Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. as the host of the Rude Awakening Morning News Show. And in the interest of more full disclosure, Brian and Dan are good friends of mine, and I do work for pressfortruth.ca, but we do disagree on things. and they're talented, accomplished local journalist, activist, filmmaker, you know, truther stars in their own right, breaking down the situation. Dan, you had 4,000 emails based on your G20 coverage, as you mentioned to me, and I'm not surprised by this, and I don't think you're BSing me because your video's got 50,000 views, and there's many of them. So straight up, what's your thoughts? I mean, in the aftermath, we had basically G20 martial law here in Toronto for a week that was escalating in nature and escalating in terms of the tension. You know, I'm not going to lead you any further. What are your thoughts on the G20?
Well, a very important point to make is the distinction between the difference of what took place on Saturday and then what happened the following Sunday. It was on Saturday where you saw the alleged activities of the so-called Black Bloc, who allegedly set fire to these police cars that were very strategically placed in key locations in the city. For example, there was two cruisers that were left at the intersection of Bay and King, which is the heart and center of the financial district. And more and more evidence is coming in as the weeks come on. People are sending us a lot of messages, a lot of emails, a lot of footage. And I'm sure the story will develop more and more in the coming weeks. But at this point, it certainly does appear that this whole thing was a setup. Those cars were left there unattended, no police around. And the Black Bloc was almost given the green light to go ahead and terrorize the city and smash up the banks and burn police cars. So as evidence comes in, it's starting to look more and more like this was a setup, either by the police or by the Black Bloc being infiltrated by the police. And basically what that did is it provided the excuse the following day to clamp down on the basic civil liberties of all Canadians, and the roundup and the detainment and the arrests of up to 244 people who were surrounded at Queen and Spadina. It also provided a photo op for the mainstream media. That's all people were watching for a little while all around the world, was footage of these burning cars, and it immediately puts into their mind, look at these bad protesters, look at these guys, we got to do something. So it somewhat, for the authorities, it justifies their $1.2 billion spent on security. But I think, you know, an important point to make is they spent $1.2 billion on security. And they're going to have us believe that they couldn't stop a group of 30 to 40 Black Bloc guys from terrorizing the city. It just does not make any sense.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, these violent images just from sort of media training and understanding have an impact on us, and so of course the demonization of dissent. But I'm with you. You know, how do you justify $1.2 billion in security by having it fail? It just makes absolutely no sense to me, much like the trillion-dollar U.S. military failed on 9/11 to stop four jumbo jets from flying around for 2 hours with all their F-16s and so on. So this definitely looks like that, and I was watching your videos today again, trying to get my recollections fresh about the G20 situation, and I did notice that you know, you might have been narrating, or whoever was narrating was literally saying, you know, the cops drove up in police cars, left them there, and there was a whole bunch of guys around in riot gear who could have kicked the crap out of anybody who came near, but they all backed up and retreated, and so they backed up and retreated to let, you know, two cop cars burn, but at the same time. You know, and I'm speculating here, but this is the only way the thing makes sense to me. At the same time, in a different shot, as soon as a bunch of protesters finish singing "O Canada," the cops are ordered to rush them. You know, like a football team. So this is insane to me. And I know the police in the city. You know, in the sense of, you know, there's good and bad ones. You know it is what it is. But they don't normally act like that, especially all in unison. How do you explain that, guys? How do you explain them backing up away from cop cars they left there to burn and yet rushing peaceful protesters singing "O Canada"? Not that any of us can, but what are your thoughts?
I would jump that up to compartmentalization. I think, you know, police that are given orders these days don't question the orders. They just take them. And I think most officers out there, if there's police officers out there listening right now, I mean, you have to remember that when you put on that badge and you put on that uniform, you've taken an oath to uphold the Constitution of Canada, and that goes above and beyond any order to get people off of the street and arrest people for allegedly a conspiracy to commit mischief. I mean, that's just a thought crime. That's like Minority Report, arresting people before they've ever done anything wrong and then holding them in a detention facility and releasing them. I was the one narrating the video that you're talking about, because I was trapped north of the blockade and Dan was trapped south of the blockade. And we witnessed these police drive these cars in. One of the windows got smashed. They got out of the cars, bubbled around the cars, and closed them off for about 30 or 40 minutes. And then they backed off. But the police have tow trucks. They have over 10 of them that they bought just for the G20. I've seen them driving around town even afterwards. And they could have driven a car in, blocked the street off for 10 minutes, and got those cars out of there. But they left them for about 6 hours on the street. And it wasn't until about 7 o'clock at night that these cars were lit on fire. They were driven down there around 1 in the afternoon, right after the protests had gone in. So I think that warrants investigation as to why those officers... Who drove them in? Who left them there? And why were they left there for 6 hours without any sort of police presence around? And when we would ask the officers who were walking away, like, why are you guys leaving this area? You left some cruisers over there. The response would simply be, well, we're just following orders. I'm told to march west, I march west. And I think, you know, these officers following certain orders and rushing people the next day and randomly arresting people, I think, is compartmentalization. They're not aware of who's giving the orders and what the effect of obeying those orders are going to be. And they just are, I think, completely forgetting their oath that they took when they put on that badge. And that's the most important promise you need to keep, is to uphold the people's rights in the Constitution. You can't get rid of those for the promise of greater security. It's a false promise. So
I understand. I've been saying, though, here, and I completely agree with you, except for one thing. I've been saying here on the radio for about 4 years now as a CKLN radio host that if the war on terror, if the fake war on terror says my job as a cop is to beat your ass, then I might beat your ass to keep my job. Because I'm not losing my $300,000 house. My wife and kids aren't going broke. I'm not the most educated individual, so I'm not just going to try and hustle for a job at a pizza shop in this economy if I can even get one. So they are in a tough boat, and the answer to that is not for them to just go through with, you know, Nazi or fascist policies. But for all of us to sort of get active in the info war so we can push back the system and expose, you know, this type of, you know, false flaggery. And Joe Warmington from the Toronto Sun, kind enough to interview me after a friend sent in pictures of me postering, because I was putting up posters trying to protest the protest and not give the state an excuse for population control exercises, but rather calmly and consistently share information outside of the sort of once every few months getting together to yell, get beat up, and go home, at least in my opinion. Feel free to disagree or agree. By all means, there's a history to them, but again, we're here on the brink of world government with a ton of problems, so maybe we have to evolve our tactics. But Joe Warmington from the Toronto Sun wrote a great article on the 26th or 27th of June saying, you know, talking about the business owners on Yonge Street, saying, where were the police? You know, people who've been there for 30 years paying taxes couldn't get any cops. You know, when they needed them, there's 1,000 protests. And I was there on Saturday night, too. There's 1,000 protesters there running everywhere. And yet at others, like a Sri Lankan or a Palestinian protest, there's cops literally on bikes keeping protesters walking south on Yonge near Dundas on one side of the yellow line, even though there's no northbound traffic. So, you know, they could have strayed over it. And they didn't let those guys stray one inch over that yellow line, and yet they let 1,000 G20 protesters run amok on Yonge Street with no cops anywhere. So, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, we need to expose what this technique is, and I'll ask you guys to agree, you know, you guys obviously agree. We need to expose what this technique is so it can't be pulled on us. And finally, on Joe Warmington, he wrote an article called Cops Had Their Hands Cuffed. Recently, where his police, you know, informants, I suppose, sources came out and said, you know, we were ordered to stand down, even specifics that make this more credible in terms of witness testimony, where people say the Montreal riot guys were pissed because they were trained, they're ready to go, and this is what they do all the time in Montreal. So your thoughts on the technique of playing our police against us? Because it seems to me, gentlemen, based on the media coverage around this and the focus on them and why the cops do this, why the cops do that, that we might be set up to be dealing with a bunch of pissed off cops in the future if they're ordered to do this again.
Yeah, well, the thing people should ask themselves is, why was this G20 summit held in the downtown core in the first place? I mean, why wasn't it held in a rural area, or better yet, at the United Nations building, or over a telephone conference or something like that? Why did they choose to hold it in the downtown core? The reason for this is because they want the clash. they want the people to clash with them. It's all part of the Hegelian dialectic and the entire plan to clamp down and to showcase their totalitarian way of dealing with society. And it was a total setup. They hold these things in cities on purpose because they know they can manipulate what is told through the mainstream media, and they can get the clash that they are hoping for in order to provide the excuse for them to clamp down on our civil rights and our liberties, and to spend money through the roof on these types of summits.
Absolutely. And Brian, let's go back to Queen of Spadina for a second. I was there. I dropped by at 3 p.m. Just walking downtown, just patrolling the streets during the G20, trying to figure out, you know, what the hell is the state up to? You sick 10,000, 19,000 from what I've heard. Cops, troops, mercs, and spooks on us. There's guys drive around in Suburbans and minivans and SUVs and just an imposing presence. And I was postering during martial law, so I was getting eyed all the time by people. I don't know who the hell these people were, but tons and tons of cops were looking at me just because I was known as the guy who was postering. And I got stopped for a thought crime myself in the financial district, walking through with headphones on, not particularly close to the fence. But I was stopped by six cops, and they said, you know, sir, if you stop, take your headphones off, take your shades off. We got a call about you. And I'm like, because I got on headphones and a pissed off look, you can question me. So, you know, but these are how the rules were changed. But back to Queen of Spadina, I got there at 3 p.m., saw a Global TV truck, and I literally filmed this with my little silver Canon camera and called it, because there's a Global TV truck there, four cops across the street, boarded up windows to the Gap, and I was like, I bet you this is where the next thing's going to be. 7 o'clock, I got back, and it was pretty much on. It was starting. Big crowds of people there, but mostly onlookers, not even protesters, not even people particularly against the G20, just people curious about what the spectacle was. And then I saw a pincer action coming from the alleyways, so I booked. I took off, you know, as things started, the crowd was pushed back a little bit, and I was like, I know where this is going. So, Brian, I'd like your take on this, because you did narrate the film about the Queen of Spadina incident, and I did see some brilliant footage of these sort of drills of Red Rover, we're going to come over and kick your ass. So break down Queen of Spadina and how the police not only, were dealing with protesters who were at least in some way mentally, possibly physically with gas masks or whatever, boots, prepared to deal with, you know, being roughed up like that, but also the people just there watching, people trying to dissent and yet rounded up in this big, herding effort.
Well, I mean, I also want to state that I wasn't in the group that was trapped at Queen and Spadina. I was actually at home at that point, already capturing and editing footage, so I watched it on the television. But we have a lot of footage. A couple of our camera guys were arrested when they were there. Tyrone Drummond from Ottawa, he was helping us out and filming some stuff, and he was one of the first people arrested. And the police never issued a warning to people for people to vacate the area. They simply trapped everybody in, and we have him on camera, the officer, saying that everybody here is going to be arrested. You are all committing the crime of conspiracy to commit mischief. Please line up in single file and make it easy on yourselves. And there was no warning for people to leave, and a lot of onlookers were trapped in there as well. And, you know, after all of this happened and people getting all rounded up, I also find it interesting that the narrative of the G20 doesn't really even discuss what the leaders were talking about when they met at the G20. Everyone's too busy focusing on what happened in terms of these protesters getting rounded up, that I don't even think the average person knows that they were discussing global financial regulation. We're talking regulating banks on a global scale. If you control the money of the world, you don't need to, it doesn't matter who writes the laws anymore. If you control the money of a country, you will control the country. So when these world leaders and bank governors are getting together to discuss further globalization and further control of our economies and our money, we're all blindsided by the big spectacle of police rounding everybody up. So I think, you know, the effect of everything that's happened at the G20 is that most people aren't even aware what was discussed at the G20. So, you know, was that successful on their part? I mean, sure. I mean, everyone's focusing too busy focusing on what's going on the side that they're not really looking at what's coming at them right in front of them, which is global financial regulation. And we haven't even discussed how you're going to mitigate that type of power. So, I mean, like I was saying, I wasn't actually at the Queen of Spadina when everyone is rounded up. I was watching it live on the news, and I was kind of happy and refreshed to see some of these news sources holding the police accountable for doing stuff like this, and I hope that there is an investigation into it. I think it's warranted, because I haven't heard any news about anybody being arrested for lighting those cars on fire. I haven't heard any specific news of any allegations of individuals charged or any names named in doing this. And I believe that, you know, like our Constitution states, we are innocent until proven guilty, and that goes for anybody who allegedly lit a car on fire or committed a crime during the G20. They are innocent until you prove them guilty in a court of law. And right now we seem to be pinning everything, you know, was it the cops who set it there? Was it the protesters who set it there? The answer is we don't know, and that's why you need an investigation into this. You need an independent public investigation into this, and you don't need the police investigating themselves with their smart task force, as they're calling it, which they conveniently named the night of as well. They had it conveniently named SMART the very night that they were alleging they were going to do an investigation into what happened with the ISU. So...
Well, yeah, and Bill Blair had to come out with a silly PR spin statement saying, we let these protest terrorist tourists destroy cop cars to keep them busy. It's like, oh, come on. If you're going to let a bunch of protest terrorist black bloc tourists destroy cop cars, why can't you let a Canadian break cop car, too, if we get a little frustrated? Hey, officer, I just lost my job. Can I torch your car? Bill Blair apparently thinks it's better for people to be distracted that way, destroying $60,000 with a taxpayer-paid cop car. But again, I think they're being set up on this because, this, to me, this looks like a federal thing. Northcom NLE 09 drills were ran at Carabana last year, at least drills that looked like they coincided. And who would have the power to order this? Plus, there was, and I'm not trying to be totally pro-cop here, but I'm just trying to go for the truth as I see it. There was an epidemic of blue flu right after the G20. You know, didn't see a cop car on the streets for a couple hours. We usually see one every 20 minutes or half an hour in Toronto. These days, was about one a day when I was a kid. And so very, very strange things are going on behind the scenes, I would suspect. When you have cops, troops, mercs, and spooks, so there's private contractors here, there's federal authorities here, this is an international summit. You know, this is Stephen Harper's baby, and he's determined to, you know, foist this demon child G20 on the city of Toronto. Dan, what are your thoughts on how the police situation on the street, what we had to deal with, the intimidating presence, the evacuation of downtown for a week in the summer? We don't have enough nice weather in this darn country and this darn city. You know, I mean, basically, you know, we were kind of kicked out of the city so these guys could break our stuff. How do you tie that in, the violence in, with the economic reasons? You know, how do people make sense of, you know, how this is supposed to impact us, in your opinion?
Well, I'm quite concerned with what happened to the upwards of 900 people who are arrested and were taken down to that makeshift Torontonimo Bay-style warehouse at the old Toronto Film Studios in the East End there. More stories are coming in about the conditions in that place. And it is just brutal. Our friend who came down from England to help us cover the G20, Charlie Veach, was arrested on his first day coming in. And he told us firsthand what his experience was like in that holding facility. They had cages lined up with CCTV cameras inside of them and microphones. He was detained for 21 hours at that particular arrest. Five of those hours, he had the handcuffs behind his back. He was denied water. He was denied food. The air conditioning in the room was cranked up. It was very much a psychological attack on the people who were being basically held prisoner in there. Charlie Veach was strip searched four times in that place on four separate occasions. And more stories are coming out about some of the horrible, horrible atrocities that took place down at that film studio. And that's where you see a lot of the footage of protesters who were standing outside getting snatched up, the snatch and grab, where plainclothes officers are just grabbing protesters off the street, throwing them into vans, and taking off. So I'm quite concerned about how the actual peaceful protesters who were there with a very legitimate cause, a very legitimate message, were treated after their unlawful arrest and detainment at the Torontonimo Bay. It's an important story that needs to be told. And I'd like to take the opportunity now to say to anybody out there who's listening, if you're one of the people who were detained and round up and held down in that facility, please contact us at dan@pressfortruth.ca. We would like to interview you. We would like to get your story out to the world and tell everybody what happened to you, because we feel this is an extremely important note to make about what took place here on the G20 Summit weekend.
Absolutely. It's 7:35 p.m. You are listening to Word of Mouth Mondays. This is your guest host, BK, a.k.a. Black Krishna. Normally host the CKLN Rude Awakening morning show from 6 to 7 a.m. Mondays through Thursdays. I'm here with Mr. Dan Dix and Mr. Brian Law, both gentlemen from pressfortruth.ca, pressfortruth.ca. And we are discussing, by and large, the G20 Summit, as well as their film United We Fall, about a large trade deal, the sequel to NAFTA, Security and Prosperity Partnership, creating a North American Union, and how that relates to this. And why is this important? Well, it's important for a number of reasons. One, you can't just let the government walk into your room late at night, molest you, and then, you know, tell you to run out and play in the sunshine the next day, you know, because you're just going to be worried about when they're going to do that again. So, you know, whatever their individual faults are, you know, hopefully they pay for them. But we just can't let a situation like this happen again here in Toronto, because if they burn 10 cops, the 10 worst cops in this whole operation, the people at the top are just going to send, you know, 10 fresh ones along with another 10,000 or 19,000 or 25,000. I'm just on Infowars.com right here, and it says military patrols beach in Panama City from Kurt Nimmo. The presence of soldiers on a crowded crowded beach during a holiday weekend has but one purpose, to acclimate citizens to the prospect of troops patrolling public spaces. And that's very much what the G20 was. It was a world government martial law psychological operation. If you want to know, you folks out there who think, wow, one world, you know, and maybe misuse, you know, Bob Marley's song, One Love. You know, he wasn't talking about groupthink. He was talking about, look, there's a true love, and you know, you got to feel that if you want to move in this world, you know, successfully. At least as I understand and interpret it, although to each their own. But the bottom line is that we've been sold this idea of one this, one that. We're united. We're all this. We're all in together. In hip hop, they got things like "It's official, yo, that is official," or "That's the bomb." A lot of that stuff is in fact part of the engineering, the social engineering of our culture. Not that we can't make use of the language we were given and the things we were given and the culture we were given, but if we just play along with, you know, everything that the establishment gives us, then we end up with martial law once in a while in Toronto, and that once in a while could increase. Naomi Klein has talked about the reasons behind you know, a lot of lefty activism not necessarily being as successful as it could have been in her book, The Shock Doctrine. She says that back in the 70s, a bunch of human rights organizations sprung up, founded by George Soros and other large foundations. And what they would do is they would exhaustively document the human rights abuses taking place in Latin America and other countries around the world, and say there's this many tortures and this many rapes and this many assassinations and this much this, and it's in violation of UN convention this and UN thingy that. And it was, and you can still see a lot of human rights organizations do that today. But what a lot of them don't do, and Ms. Klein even admitted this, although she doesn't go as far as some of us in our research into the bigger picture. She does do some great work. And The Shock Doctrine is a great book about how the establishment has plans in place just in case of crises to foist on us, like this martial law situation. You know, she mentioned that they never tied the human rights abuses they were documenting to the violence, or just to the economic reasons behind the human rights violations and the violence. So basically, folks, you know, and Dan, Brian, you guys are two fine young Canadian men, you know, working on these issues. Brian, maybe you can answer this. You did direct the film United We Fall. The only reason that our government would be sickened, you know, this kind of, armed force on us is to train them to do it in the future and to train us to accept it, because I've seen a whole bunch of 70% off signs at the Eaton Center in a bunch of stores on all three floors, and that ain't normal. 70 is a new 50. It seems like we might be heading for tough economic times, so our own economic issues could cause us to want to dissent a bit more, even the average Canadian, not the protester in particular, and this is a way of minimizing that. Brian, break down some economics and some politics and some what the hell are we up to and what the hell should we be up to and what's going on.
Yeah, well, exactly. When you get economic hard times, people feel it in their wallet and they feel it personally, and they're going to go out and try and petition their government peacefully, I would hope, to make changes that are going to affect their family. And when you have peaceful protesters trying to go out to protest things like global financial regulation. A lot of people happen to believe that the financial collapse in 2008 was engineered. You know, Goldman Sachs is being investigated for fraud right now. The head of the Bank of Canada used to work for Goldman Sachs, Mr. Mark Carney. So,
and they were also hired by the Ontario government to sell off our assets, even though they're under fraud investigation in the U.S. Please continue, but I just... The type of ridiculous hypocrisy that goes on with just accepting these people screwing us and screwing up and lying again and again is insane.
Yeah, and when you get bad economic times, you're going to get people wanting to protest and wanting to petition their government for changes. And when people try and do that, and the response from the police is to round everybody up and convince everybody that these were dangerous protesters and they were going to commit a crime and that we did the public a favor by rounding them up because of what happened the previous day, it conditions everybody to accept that as a normality or accept that as normal when it happens in the future again. And everyone just says, well, you know, those protesters were getting violent. There were some violent ones in that crowd. You know, people did have weapons in that crowd, and therefore all of them are guilty by association. If people read into our Constitution, there's laws to protect us against guilt by association. If you haven't personally committed a crime, you cannot be held accountable for, you know, the person next to you having a weapon in their bag. How are you supposed to know if a person next to you has a weapon? But it doesn't justify the random rounding up and bag searches and checking your papers and wanting to know where you're going and the extreme paranoia that I think, you know, I think the police were victims of what happened with these globalists coming to town as well. I mean, you know, if there's police officers out there as well who want to tell their story, contact us at dan@pressfortruth.ca and tell us your story as well, because we want to get both sides of this to understand it, because the police were victimized just as much as the public were, being told to, you know, do things outside of their oath and do things outside of the Constitution. And, you know, they listen to it, yeah, because they're getting paid. It's their job to follow orders. They don't have the authority as a new recruit to stand up to, you know, a guy who's been there for 20 years and say, sorry, boss, I'm not doing what you just told me. It's a simple solution then. You're fired. I'll find another person who will do it. But it's important to realize that it conditions people. It conditions both the public and the police to accept this as normal. But it's not normal to do this to people. It's extremely abnormal in a democratic free society, or supposedly democratic free society, to punish people for trying to petition their government and make changes that are going to affect them in a positive way. And it scares a lot of people off from wanting to do it in the future. And I don't want people in my country scared off by their own government, because when you have people afraid of their government, you have tyranny. The government should be afraid of the people, because we are the true power source. And when they start rounding us up randomly, that's when we need to be most vigilant about protecting them from doing that in the future.
Absolutely. And you are listening to Word of Mouth Mondays. Again, this is your host, BK. I'm here with Dan Dixon and Brian Law from Press4Truth.ca, Press4, Truth.ca. Go there and see the new film, United We Fall, about the merger of Canada, America, and Mexico, politically and bureaucratically behind the scenes. In a nutshell, the North American Union works like this. A bunch of corporations get together, decide how they want to carve up this, you know, chunk of planet Earth. Then they hold a meeting, invite a bunch of politicians, and tell them how to, you know, execute it legislatively. And that's, you know, as simple as I can make that. So we have these trilateral working groups with the top 10 CEOs from Mexico, Canada, America, from places like the Council on Foreign Relations or the Council of Canadian Chief Executives here in Canada, and the similar parallel group in Mexico, which are essentially all satellite arms of the Royal Institute for International Affairs, which is in London, England, also known as Chatham House, C-H-A-T-H-A-M House. And because that was set up, the roundtable groups were set up in the early 1900s to facilitate this process, the process of spreading free trade throughout the world, an idea that was come up with in the 1500s by philosopher John Dee on behalf of the British Empire, who ran the world for 500 years. The sun never set in the British Empire, and in my opinion, you know, they never stopped. What are your thoughts on the Queen being in town? Dan, you know this, you got an exploding pyramid in your arm. And yet you're still the sanest guy I know. So what are your thoughts on that? The Queen, Freemasonry, secret societies, how does that tie into all this this stuff? Just for a second, just because she's here, and there's 100 pictures of her a day in the paper. So what are your thoughts on the Queen being here, and how the bigger power structure in that sense relates to what just happened to and in Toronto?
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't had a whole lot of time to put much thought into that. We've been very, very preoccupied with our G20 coverage and going through all the footage. I heard that she's in town. I briefly saw some clips on the news, and immediately the first thing I thought about was my good friend Charlie Veach, who had just been detained at the airport with having a warrant out for his arrest for impersonating a peace officer. First thing I thought is, hey, the Queen's in town. Maybe we should petition to her and say, hey, one of your boys is being treated wrong over here. But again, yeah, we've been so busy with just trying to, compile all of the footage and go through it all and editing videos and that, that we haven't had a whole lot of time to pay attention to mainstream news at this point. We've been so focused on the G20. That's pretty much what we've been doing.
No, absolutely. And Brian, if you have anything to add, please do on the Queen or on, because people need to understand, there's two worlds. You guys are doing some very, very practical work. You're documenting what's going on in the streets of Toronto. You're filming thousands and thousands of police officers and the formations and what the rest. And you're interacting with them. You're communicating with them. When many people today are afraid to. And I'm communicating with them as well, and things are going reasonably well, based on, us being here, surviving, being able to talk about it freely and openly. So Brian, your thoughts on that, just because... this is the way for people to relate to it, and as populace, the more people we can get to relate to this, the more people we can get to take action when we need to take action at this time. Again, with 70% off signs all over the Eaton Center, who knows when the blowback from that and the blowback from the economic shutdown in Toronto for a week during the G20 and so on, the ripple effects of that will hit us harder.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on right now all simultaneously, and I think it's somewhat confusing or overloading people, and they're just kind of wanting to shut down and say, okay, there's so much going on, the BP oil spill, the war on terror continues, there's wars being started up, Canada's got to decide its policy on Afghanistan coming up very soon, we've got, municipal elections coming up here in Toronto, the G20 just came to, and the G8, a lot of people aren't paying attention to what happened up at the G8 as well. I mean, couldn't get anywhere near that summit, but, in terms of, all the stuff that's going on right now, I think it's just overloading people, and I think people are somewhat turning off to wanting to talk about these issues, and that's why it's important to go out and start these dialogues with people and get them talking about this, because it's an extremely ironic situation that, both the police forces and the regular average people out there are both getting screwed over by these elites who are, out there profiteering from what they're doing behind closed doors at the G20 and global financial regulation and controlling the world's economies even further, and taxing everybody without any representation. We're not getting a say on this, but they've got us fighting with each other while they're busy robbing both of us at the same time. And I think, it's important for all the people to realize that there's a very small section of society that is deciding on these policies and are deciding to implement things without the approval of any elected officials in the country or any of the constituents of those elected officials. And it seems more and more every day that goes by we're being able to have less of an effect and an impact on our local communities for the sake of the global greater good. We have to sacrifice more and more stuff on an everyday basis for the global greater good.
And that's a communist principle. The Soviet Constitution in the 1970s said we need to preserve and use less now to preserve it for future generations. And then, of course, the people at the top just stole it. So the same thing's basically happening here today as they go for a neo-feudalism where the war on terror rapture takes our rights and the global warming rapture takes our stuff. As we all agree to use less, live in smaller houses, drive smaller cars, probably wear smaller shoes, soon. But again, Brian, you mentioned that you don't want your fellow Canadians to be afraid of this. One guy who couldn't get into Canada, who's inspired a ton of Canadians, just like he's inspired a ton of people around the world, is Mr. Luke Radowski, who's younger than me, but I'm going to call him Mr. because he's the man. And I saw him confront David Rockefeller at his house and Zbigniew Brzezinski and have perfectly normal conversations with people like Felipe Calderon, the leader of Mexico, to ask him, what are your thoughts on, a North American Union, a common currency, and have this politician ask him. So Luke can play both sides. If he's got to throw down and get some, verbal brass knuckles going, he can go. But if he's just got to chill out and be a really smart, intelligent, courageous polite, charismatic young man. He's got the tools and the stones, so he couldn't get into Canada. Dan Dix from PressForTruth.ca, I saw you on the phone talking to him, and you said you got a text. Breakdown, just for the people out there listening to CKLN right now, Word of Mouth Mondays, it's your guest host BK here with Brian Law and Dan Dix from PressForTruth.ca. Who Luke Radowski is, what We Are Change is, and then what the heck happened and why a courageous young man without peer couldn't get into freaking Canada.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Luke Radowski is an excellent example of just how much power people have and the unbelievable achievements that one man can have. He sparked a movement. He is the founder of the grassroots movement We Are Change. There are now hundreds and hundreds of chapters all over the world. So that's a testament to show you the power that we have to take our part in fighting this system, fighting this new world order. If somebody like a Luke Radowski could start a We Are Change and get millions of people all over the world on board, then I believe anyone can do it. And he certainly is a fine example, and people should pay attention to what he's doing. And obviously, the powers that be are paying very close attention to what he's doing because he is having a massive effect. He is waking up a lot of people with his message. So he simply tried to come down here to meet up with us to cover the G20, and he was stopped at the Canadian border. They searched through his bags, they checked his laptops, they searched through even his underwear, they looked for anything illegal that they could get him on, and they found nothing. So they began to resort through old trumped-up charges that he had for confronting Mayor Bloomberg, and the funny thing is, those charges were dropped.
Hey, he wasn't convicted, I was just going to say, so he's not a felon.
That's right. Those charges were dropped anyways, but that's all they had on him. Because he is a law-abiding citizen, and they just did not want him coming into this country because he has a loud voice, he has a huge following. A lot of people have seen the awesome work he did at G20 in Pittsburgh, waking up many, many people. So they did everything they could to stop him from coming into the country, and now apparently he's not going to be allowed in to Canada for upwards of 10 years. They really want to keep him out because of his political message. And, I was very, very sad to hear it when he called me. He said, you know, Dan, man, I got bad news. I'm here at the border. They've detained me. The customs went through all my things, and they're not going to let us into the country. And, right there, it was the beginning of the hell that we were about to descend into for the weekend. It was a bad way to start it because he's a true champion and an asset of the truth movement. And I'm ashamed at the Canadian government for how they treated our friend from England, Charlie Veach, and how they treated our friend from New York, Luke Radowski. It's just an atrocity.
Yeah, these guys are cultural leaders. And yet this is not a subculture. You know, we're not like comic book collectors. You know, you're going out there and seeing how they change our rights in this country, and you do mean our rights. So this area of anti-globalization, or the new term, anti-New World Order, which includes, you know, the secret society aspects of it and the central banking aspects of it, delves, you know, as deep as we could possibly delve without, you know, flying off into wackiness we can't prove. This is on behalf of all Canadians, and so Luke Radowski is a cultural leader and a figure and a guy that could like he's done in the States and elsewhere, could really reach a lot of people. And the country of Canada, here in communist Canada, where we're a little too quiet about these issues. We know the government's evil, we don't talk about it, just like communist countries. And whenever that happened in communist countries, the government just got more evil because they went, you guys won't even talk, you ain't got to do nothing. You ain't talking, you ain't doing something. And so we definitely got to get a bit more active on that. Brian Law from PressForTruth.ca, what are your thoughts on that and on activism? I'm just reading on Infowars.com now, one of a number of great websites I recommend, the Alex Jones family of sites, among many others out there, doing great work, giving us enough truth to figure out what it is, and then to start to reverse engineer it and decipher it in our own, you know, culture, in our own environment, in our own country, without having someone tell us, this is what to think. You know, once you know there's a new world order, once you know what some of their bigger strategies are, you can look at your own damn city and go, holy crap, hey, you know, that they might be right. And to stop that from happening, there's an article here from Paul Joseph Watson from today, Monday, July 5th. TSA, that's the Transportation Safety Authority, to block websites with, quote, controversial opinions. Controversial. Now, who decides controversial? One man's controversy could be another man's craft. Brian Law, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's just an attempt to go and silence individual opinion. I mean, the Internet is a glorious way for people to get their democratic opinions out. And, I mean, I don't agree with, you know, more a lot of sites I see on the Internet, but I stand up for their right to say what they want and speak their mind, because that's part of being in a democratic society, is that you're allowed the right to free speech. And the moment you start trying to control things like the Internet, as President Obama is attempting to do down in the United States, and block people's access to it in the event of a cyber terror attack, which they had a nice little propaganda piece done by CNN a few months ago showing what would happen during a cyber terror attack in the United States. They're trying to create any excuse they can to go and silence groups like Luke Radowski and Charlie Veach, and even Press for Truth. They don't want individual people who aren't getting paid to do this, who are doing it because they believe in the message and they want to see real change affected in their local communities. They don't want to see that. They don't want to see people standing up for their rights. That's absolutely repugnant. I mean, you were talking about the Queen being in town right now and everyone, you know, marveling at the all the glitz and glam of the British royal family coming to town. And, you know, she's also traveling with Prince Philip, which is he's an interesting character. One of his most famous quotes saying, you know, if he could be reincarnated as anything, he wanted to be reincarnated as a disease so that he could help wipe off some portion of the earth. I mean, if you look into the history of the British royal family, you'll find that it's quite in stark contrast to the stuff that you hear about in the mainstream media and the glitz and glam. And I mean, Canada's a constitutional a constitutional monarchy, right? Mm-hmm. Our style of government. We're not a republic.
The governor general can shut down parliament whenever, you know, she wants.
She's done it twice already. She's done it twice, and she's done it twice. She's prorogued parliament twice now. It's never happened twice in the same prime minister's
term. So she can
term.
Tell the people we elected, go home. Don't
exactly.
represent them.
Don't represent them. You're gone home for a few months, and it's absolutely shocking that, you know, people in Canada, you know, maybe it's something in our water supply, who knows, but you know, people in Canada seem to be very laxed about this, and we have, you know, we as Canadians have a generally, you know, fairly laxed, I guess, like, people look at us as being a fairly relaxed, you know, fairly, I guess, help me out here. I'm losing.
Now, you know what? There are a million attacks on us, and I've been putting up posters out there,
yeah.
And I was saying, you know, screw the $1 billion G20 protest. You know, can we share the non-GMO shopping guide, you know, seedsofdeception.com instead?
Mm-hmm.
Just calmly and consistently passing on information to get our minds right and to get us used to it, because we're getting a steady stream of crap from the media and from other sources socializing us, working together, whether they know it or not. Some people are just, you know, they're just doing, you know, what it is to do and trying to put their own spin on it. But the larger framework is we're getting whacked from a million sides. So if we react to that once every few months, you know, by yelling at some cops, getting beaten up and going home, it's not going to get us political change. But if we say, you know, Montreal and Vancouver don't use fluoride, do they know something that we should here in Toronto, and put fluoridealert.org, maybe some people will, you know, start to filter the fluoride out of their water and so on. So there's a number of things that we can do. You know, Dan, your thoughts on the InfoWar? They might be going for the Internet. You're keeping cameras on you. You know, you're locking and loading, pointing and shooting at everything that needs to be shot. You know, and you don't shoot. What's your motto?
We shoot bullets. We shoot frames.
There it is. We don't shoot bullets. We shoot frames. From Dan Dix at PressForTruth.ca. So that's great to know.
Well, the authorities, the powers that be, if you will, had certainly been trying to stifle our efforts this past G20 weekend. On the key day, my website went down. Anytime I was trying to coordinate locations to get to film with any of our camera guys, my cell phone would immediately drop out. Anytime I was doing key interviews, like with the Corbett Report and Freedomizer Radio and a few other big ones, anytime I mentioned Black Bloc or police provocateurs or burning police cars, the phone calls would drop. We got back to my place and started trying to upload raw footage to YouTube, and entire 3-4 minute chunks would be missing from the video. The audio would be out of sync by a minute or two, making it virtually unwatchable, so we had to resort to putting some of the videos up on the Press for Truth Facebook page. But there was certainly clearly an element out there who was trying to stifle our efforts, I suppose because we did so many pre-G20 video reports letting everybody know that we were going to be doing extensive coverage. We were going to have our camera guys and our eyes all over the city keeping an eye on things in order to show the world what's truly happening, because the mainstream media, we knew, was going to slant it. So they apparently took the appropriate measures to try to stifle our efforts. But you know what? We had a lot of people tuning in, and we still were able to get our message out. You can try to stop us. You can try to shut us down, but we're in it for the truth, and we're going to keep pressing.
Absolutely, and a great thought, Dan Dix. You know, I agree with you. I mean, you know, I've been I was followed on Thursday, June 24th, by cops and helicopters and city workers up Yonge Street, just east and west of Yonge Street. They were just flying around following me. And it wasn't that threatening. They weren't trying to be threatening. They'd already ID'd me a dozen times for postering during the martial law thing. And I complied. I know, Brian, you resisted, and you're going through some issues right now, and I think it's great. I wanted to stay on the street so I could get the information out and not get locked up for 21 hours like Charlie Veach. But, you know, there's many ways to fight this thing. But the point is that, you know, they have overwhelming physical superiority. So if they want to get you, they're going to get you. It's just not something you should worry about on a regular basis. And the rest of it's just, a cat and mouse game, chasing rabbits. You know, I mean, you know, if I'm walking around postering, or if you're walking around filming, or if you're putting out ideas that may catch fire, you know, or films like United We Fall, which you can see at pressfortruth.ca, or buy a DVD at pressfortruth.ca, then those things can, you know, they'll try and stop them or slow them down. But even within the system, a lot of people are just doing their jobs, and the city guys look at me kind of sheepishly, and I'm like, don't worry, man, like, you know, somebody told you to take down my posters. That's cool. I mean, I'm trying to tell people to put more up. You know, we'll keep this game up. It happens on Queen Street every freaking day. So it's no big deal. You know, we're kind of all sort of getting aware of the system that's threatening all of us at this point, from health risks to wealth risks to screwing up our relationships to messing up our ability to communicate with each other. So we've got to try and immunize ourselves against this. Pressfortruth.ca is a great place to do that. Gentlemen, Brian Law, Dan Dix, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
And guys, just before I sign off, some more websites to shout out if you're not familiar with this area of investigation. Infowars.com, great place to look. Naturalnews.com, great place to look. TrendsResearch.com for the upcoming trends, financial forecast, social, and so on. CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com, the great work of Alan Watt, Canadian hero. Locally, PressForTruth.ca once again. TorontoTruthSeekers.com, about 400 members still active. We're on the streets on Saturday. ConspiracyCulture.com, great book and DVD store where you can go cop some of this info. And Toronto Street News, phenomenal paper from Victor Fletcher, the Frank Conspiracy Sinatra of this game in Toronto. It's 2010, folks. We've got to get our heads in the game here in TDOT. We just had martial law in Toronto. Can't just forget about it. The PSYOP, basically the media, took 3 days to make us forget about it, more or less, because we want to play. We want to have fun. No problem. We have an amazing city. That's what makes this place great, because we can have fun. Let's just get a little bit of work done, too. And it's been your host, BK, with Dan Dixon, Brian Law from PressForTruth.ca for Word of Mouth Mondays. Have a great evening, everybody.
Toronto, you are now about to take a ride off the track. I go by the name of the official DJ, Dave Nellis. Running with my dude, the Milkman Legend, and the Fly Demon Tanisha on CKLN 88.1 FM. Each and every Monday, let's go. I go by the name of Nellis, the official DJ. Eight to ten off the track every Monday. Homeboy Legend, lock it on the mic, and the Fly Demon Tanisha keep the levels high. Riding in the whip, no need to number run. Just set the 3 digits to 88. One, get the job done. Who rhymed that death? You are now about to take a ride off the track. Go 416-7905. Time to settle up. Let's